Second hour, Darren Donica, Chase here on this gorgeous Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live Monday through Friday on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day during the week. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Let's head over to the campus of Belmont. The Bruins have news you can use, and to pass that news along, their athletics director, Scott Corley, is on the line with us. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a great day.
I was going to say, if you didn't have anything other than that as your answer, I would probably tilt my head like my dog when he hears a weird noise. Like, what? Start with, how did all this begin? Obviously, we know there's been a shakeup in the OVC. Austin Peay announced they're leaving. You already had members leaving last year in Eastern Kentucky and Jacksonville State. But I guess just kind of take us through the process, if you could.
Yeah, you know, I think it really started probably in our campus where we had a change in leadership. You know, Dr. Fisher retired after 20 years. We brought in Dr. Greg Jones, and I think whenever a new president joins a university, they probably get calls from different conference commissioners. And so the Missouri Valley also has a new conference commissioner in Jeff Jackson. And so Jeff, doing his job, reached out to Greg and, you know, took the opportunity to say, hey, I know you're new. We'd love to talk to you, tell you a little bit about what the Missouri Valley is and looking to do. And, you know, Greg reached out to me, asked my opinion on that. I said, you know, given all that is going on and, you know, the NCAA Division I with conference affiliation, I think we would be wise to at least talk and see what those conversations sound like. And, you know, those things kind of sped up, certainly. We had a really good talk with Jeff initially, loved his vision, loved the idea that it's a basketball-centric conference. While they play football, it is about basketball for them, which aligns with us. They want to grow in metropolitan markets. Obviously, Nashville is very attractive to them. And then they understood our, you know, just what we've done athletically and academically. And so we really had a good conversation. Then we had the site visit with some presidents. They liked what they saw. We continue to like what we heard. And, you know, this thing kind of certainly moved quick. And some of that is, you know, there is some instability at the OVC. And, you know, when Austin Peay made their decision, you know, we had to really decide, you know, how quickly did we want to move. We actually thought it was in the best interest for all parties to move quicker than not. And so that got us here in a short amount of time. I think all that started probably in mid-June, and here we are a couple months later. So it went fast, but it's the right decision for us, and I think that's what allowed it to move fast. Is anyone I talk to on the board, chairman of the board, you know, all the trustees, they just said this is a no-brainer. We need to do it.
I know what you just laid out with the you know, the uncertainty of the OVC conference. Or OVC, that's redundant. I don't know why I said OVC conference.
That was the Woody Woodenhofer move right there.
It's like, let me go to the ATM machine. Redundant. So
NIT tournament.
Yes, that one too. We could go on and on. Sorry, Scott. I digress. So when you talk about the uncertainty of the conference that you're currently in, but how much of it with the success of Rick Byrd and the success of Casey Alexander now and the success of the basketball program, like people around the country are now fully aware of Belmont basketball. And we all know the OVC, it was going to take unusual set of circumstances to get two teams. You knew going in you had to win the tournament or else, right? You weren't getting in the NCAA tournament. Well, I don't believe that's the case with the Missouri Valley Conference. I mean, they're a pretty darn strong conference, and they've got some really good teams. The fact that they can get multiple teams in the NCAA tournament, did that factor into this at all?
Oh, that's 100%. I mean, this move is more about moving our program forward and getting into a conference like the Missouri Valley. So I do want to make that clear. That was a huge part of it, and it's, you know, not just basketball, but that's the most important, certainly, and it's men's and women's basketball. And that is very attractive. I mean, obviously, the year we had last year going 26-4 and not even getting an NIT bid was very sobering, and it speaks to, you know, you got to win those three games in Evansville from the OVC, where now it gives you a little margin of error. Now, the offset to that, Darren, is, you know, the likelihood that we're going to win 21 games in a row in a conference like the Missouri Valley is going to be a lot more challenging than the 21 games we won last year, non-conference and conference. But you get my point. And really, when you look at the Missouri Valley, it's not just basketball. I mean, volleyball's had multi-bids in 15 out of the last 17 years. Men's soccer's had 17 years of at-large bids. And so I do think it gives all of our student-athletes a greater opportunity to get into the NCAA tournament, which we all know that's what these student-athletes want to experience. But what's exciting on the basketball side is once you get in the tournament, since 2012, the Missouri Valley is 12-1 in first-round NCAA tournament games. So you go in with a greater opportunity to win. You'll get a higher seed, more than likely, because the strength of schedule is better. And you've just been hardened by coming through a very challenging conference schedule. I think it gives you a better chance to win. And as you know, as our programs in basketball continue to grow, that's the next step for us, right? You know, win a game or two in that NCAA tournament on the men's side, and for the women to continue, you know, to win that second game and get to the Sweet 16. So I think the Valley gives us that opportunity.
What's your mindset, Scott, watching this shift all around you? The music's playing and everybody's, you know, looking for a chair to sit in before the music stops with these conferences, and everybody's, you know, scrounging everywhere, and there's this shift everywhere that's been going on in athletics. What do you make of that, and where do you think ultimately this is all going? Is this going to eventually settle down, or are you a little surprised at what's been going on over the last, let's say, 6 months or so? 6 months or a year?
Well, I mean, certainly Texas, Oklahoma caught everybody by surprise in the industry, and that has led to a lot of this. You know, where did the dominoes, you know, end up? And you can see the shifts going on. It does have a domino effect when you have two schools like that make that move. It you know, the reaction from the Big 12 was understandable. They're trying to stay together, so they're going to poach, and it just kind of leads from there. So in a way, I'm not surprised once those two moves were announced. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, every school's got to look at their own situation and decide, you know, what is the best fit for them. You know, leaving conferences is not easy. I can tell you that. I'm doing it. It's not easy. It's not an easy decision. And you got some commissioners that are out there, you know, trying to do different things. And, you know, the A-Sun has a certain strategy. And, you know, I'm fully confident that Beth and the OVC will find some schools to join the OVC to stabilize those types of things. So it's definitely, you know, as an AD, you've got to keep your eyes and ears open. And ultimately, you got to do what you think is best for your own program.
Talking to Scott Corley, athletics director at Belmont. They have announced that they're headed to the Missouri Valley Conference. And Scott, I wonder too, just the flow of travel and the way the league is spread out. I know you probably put a lot of thought into that, but tell me how different that will be for the kids, you know, to go from, you know, a much more regional, compact, geographic league like the OVC to what is going to be.
Yeah, that's certainly the biggest change for us. You know, and that was one of the things we loved about the OVC. It was a bus league. You know, you could, you know, a lot of times we just drive up the day of a game, play the game, and drive back. So it's, you know, student athletes weren't missing as much class, those types of things. But, you know, as the OVC continues to go through change, you know, the schools that they may bring in may not be such a geographic fit either. You know, you lose a Jacksonville State 3.5 hours, Eastern Kentucky 3.5 hours. You lose Austin Peay, obviously 45 minutes. So, you know, when you weigh kind of the increased travel, and there's no doubt it will be, Northern Iowa, Drake, you know, Missouri State. I mean, those are plane rides and then some bus rides, you know, on top after the plane lands. But I do think, you know, when you weigh all the pros and cons and you look at the different type of markets that we're going to be able to get in with Chicago and St. Louis, where they've hosted the men's basketball tournament 32 years in a row, those are really attractive markets. That St. Louis, 4.5 hours away. I mean, you got Evansville, you've got Southern Illinois. I mean, you still have some schools that are bussable, but clearly, and we knew that was part of the decision tree, is we knew there'd be more travel, which would lead to some increased cost. And, you know, we also understand that our student athletes may miss a little bit more class time, but knowing our student athletes, they will continue to take care of business in the classroom. We've got, you know, we've won the academic trophy 18 out of the last 20 years in the conferences we were in. So I think we can cover that. But, you know, in some ways, some of these kids may be excited to get on a plane and go play somewhere.
Sure.
But that is the biggest change, Willie, no doubt.
Yeah, and certainly where they're playing, that they have some great atmospheres with crowds and
exactly.
Things like that. And that was my next question, too. You know, it's always fun to watch a game on TV where you're at a place where the people care. Like in that region of the country, man, they love their college basketball, and that is the main thing to do in those towns. So I'm curious, too, Scott, the exposure about, you know, television and things like that. I know a lot of the games these days, regardless of the league, are streamed. But what about television exposure and maybe what that will do to non-conference scheduling opportunities for you?
Yeah, I mean, they are also part of ESPN Plus, but they do have you know, some media contracts with Bally's and I think the Fox Sports in Chicago, you know, which will give us certainly different exposure to help, you know, the media contract. I'm still learning some of the nuances, Willie, but I believe it comes due in 2025. And so I think adding us, you know, gives hopefully a little bit more potential to negotiate a more favorable media contract and things like that. But that is clearly part of it. And you're right. I mean, the venues we're going to get to play in and the crowds and the energy that's going to be in those buildings, I think our student athletes are going to really value. You know, as an example, Evansville, which hasn't had the most success in men's basketball, they still average over 5,000 fans a game. And so they come out and support. So all of that is exciting. You know, the media markets, I do believe, are going to be better. You know, it's still predominantly going to be a lot of ESPN Plus, but just the men's basketball tournament championship game is on national TV, CBS. So that right there is exciting to think about.
We're talking to Scott Corley, the athletic director at Belmont, as they announced they'll move to the Missouri Valley Conference beginning in the fall of 2022. Willie asked about non-conference scheduling. Obviously, there is one game that's, or really has been two games that are very important to people around here. How do you anticipate this affecting the Lipscomb rivalry? Is only one game going to be played between the two schools this year? I know it's very early in the process, but how would you view that moving forward?
Yeah, I don't see the non-conference schedule changing much, Chase. I mean, with 11 schools, I would assume the Missouri Valley will do, you know, play each school twice, so that's 20 conference games. The OVC has historically been 18. We went to 20 last year just with the COVID season. So it still affords us some opportunities, and certainly the Lipscomb game is important to both us and Lipscomb. So I don't see that game changing at all. You know, if anything, maybe it, you know, I may be way ahead of myself here, but, you know, Murray becomes a non-conference game, and maybe we could schedule, you know, Murray home and homes, or, you know, every year kind of rotating places to try to keep that great rivalry. So I don't think it changes a whole lot with our non-conference schedule and the way our coaches go about scheduling. They want to play really good, tough non-conference schedules. I think it'll help prepare us for the Missouri Valley. So I think right now, and I don't want to speak for Casey and Bart, but that's kind of where my mindset is.
Obviously, the future is very exciting with this announcement and joining the Valley, but you have to be excited about this upcoming season as well when it comes to, you know, especially talking about the men's basketball team, what Casey has put together, all the players coming back. How pumped are you to get this thing going?
We're very excited. If anything, trying to keep our expectations in check because, you know, we think it has the potential to be a very, very special year. Obviously, we got a lot of talent coming back, a lot of, you know, great coaching with Casey at the helm. We've got a great schedule that affords us the opportunity to really make some noise on a national level if we can win. You know, I think it all aligns, but we all know it's sports, it's athletics. You got to stay healthy. You got to make sure you don't have a bad call go against you, you know, for everything to fall in place. But we're as optimistic as ever. You know, it'll be fun to see us in the Orlando tournament. Our first round game is against Drake, which will be a conference opponent next year, and they're picked in the top three of the Valley, so that'll be a good measuring stick for us. And if, you know, we can win that game, we'll probably play Alabama, and who knows. I just feel very, very confident with the coaching staff and the type of just players we got back, mix of, you know, experience and youthful talent. And so, yeah, I'm just trying not to get too ahead of myself, but it'll be fun.
No doubt about it, and we're looking forward to it. I know you got to wait a little bit until next year, but big news nonetheless. Thanks for joining us and passing all that information along, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Always a pleasure, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
That is Scott Corley, Belmont Athletics Director. It is huge news. Currently, they've got Illinois State, Southern Illinois, Bradley, Valpo, Evansville, was it Northern Iowa, Indiana State, Missouri State, Drake, and Loyola in that basketball conference. There's no football.
Loyola, yes, that Loyola. Remember that?
Is it Loyola of Chicago,
yes.
Sister Jean?
Oh, yes. They will be in that league.
Oh, wow.
That is their league.
That's going to be fun.
By the way, Sister Jean, I think last time I checked, is 102 years old. That is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It really is, I think, a very special basketball league. There's so much credibility, I think, even though the teams have changed. Like Wichita State was a big staple in that league for a long, long time, and they're not there anymore. But, you know, that league, regardless of the change, you go back to Indiana State, you know, with Larry Bird. You got some history in that league, and in places to play that have some history and have a following. It's gonna be fun. And I'll tell you, this particular Belmont team, I believe, are a top 25 team. I think as stacked as they are, let's see how they do in these non-conference games, because that's the test. Like he just said, they're gonna get a chance to play some teams that they couldn't play last year, but they absolutely annihilated their competition for the most part last year. I think they're good enough to win some of these games. I think they could get some traction as a top 25 team this year.
I hate to say this because I hate this for the OVC, but, you know, with all these departures and the uncertainty, who knows?
This kind of caught me by surprise. I did not know that this was coming.
But yeah, here's the deal, though. I think this is actually the best thing that, because this is a great landing spot for them. Like, as much as I love, you know, OVC here in our backyard, but that push because of that, I mean, you just heard Scott say it. I mean, Missouri Valley gets – multiple teams in, right, in the NCAA tournament.
They have,
like, you do not have to
much
win
easier.
Their tournament. They've had some really good program years where they had really good teams. People were talking about the Missouri Valley Conference a lot, and when it comes to basketball. So I just think in the end this is going to be – so that makes them 11 members. My guess is they'll probably try to pull one more in, right, make it a 12-team league, wouldn't you think?
I would think so.
Or try for Murray State. I mean,
ooh,
Murray State geographically makes sense.
The one.
Now, listen to this, too. Since 2008, assuming, so obviously this includes Belmont.
By the way, that sounded like a fireworks show, right, when Elijah said that?
I think because we all had the same thought. Like, it's a perfect match. If you could grab those two.
So as of right now, with including Belmont, that would be four teams in the since 2008 that have won NCAA tournament games with them, Bradley, Drake, and Loyola Chicago. Add Murray State, that's five different teams that not have just appeared in the tournament but have won games in the NCAA tournament. That'd be
a
pretty big deal.
Loyola went to the Final Four.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this, because I know you guys, I think I was still producing, but it was a pretty big deal.
Well, actually, Indiana State went to the national championship game, if you remember.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Wichita State went to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Larry Bird.
Wichita State's been to multiple Final Fours. You want to go back?
Yeah. But they're not in it anymore.
Not anymore.
But do you guys...
But they did it from that league, is my point.
Do you guys feel when, and I, you know, I, it's our city, but when the OVC tournament left Nashville, that's really when it felt like, okay, well, you know, nobody around here is going to pay attention. I mean, I'm being honest. So it goes to Evansville. The tournament
ironically,
leaves.
It goes to Evansville, right?
Which yeah. And it just, I feel like that move really, really hurt them.
There's also never underestimate the importance of the football dynamic here. As much as we watch the basketball more, I think from where we sit, the football finances drive so much. There's something going on there, and I don't pretend to know what's happening there. But it's a tricky thing, especially at that level. What is football? Mm-hmm. And what's the importance of football in that league? And do you have to play football? Do you not have to play football? You know, clearly
well,
for Belmont. Clearly
Murray
for Belmont.
Football.
Right. So it's a different formula for Murray State with football than it is for Belmont
with
no football.
Yeah, but how do you do that? Because that is a good point. Right now, they don't have any – none of those teams – well, I guess that's not true, right?
Missouri Valley has football.
They have very good football. North Dakota State's technically in the Missouri Valley in football, and they win the national title FCS.
They have great football. I got to do a game a few years ago in that league. It's a tough league.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, Darren, I hate this for the OVC. We've, you know, enjoyed the rivalries and having so many teams that are around here in the OVC.
Yep.
You know, with Belmont and Austin Peay and TSU and so that's tough. And Beth DeBush, their commissioner, has been great to us as well. Yep. But
it just doesn't feel like when Scott said Beth DeBush will go out and they'll get someone. I don't know if
they've lost some heavy hitters.
They've lost, yeah. They've
and if they lose Murray,
but every league has to do it though. It's like every league has to be prepared. They have to have.
Where's their pool? Where are they?
That's the question.
You know, where are they going to be dipping? I don't know where are you getting.
You know,
who are you pulling over to you?
It's a really good question. I don't know. I wonder if the domino effect goes down to a school like Trevecca or a school like Cumberland, unique situations, Division II in one case, dominant NIA program in another. Everything evolves. That's the one thing we know. Like, oh,
and it's kind of like they did when they pulled Belmont out of the A-Sun.
Once upon a time, I would have said there is no way that Belmont and Lipscomb are going Division I. They dominate NAIA. Why would they want everyone to leave? They contend for a national title every year. And then here we are 20 years later, and – you see where they sit. So everything is always a constant evaluation and what's best for the school, for the athletic program, et cetera.
We will come back. We'll head east. We'll head to Knoxville. We'll talk to our man Vince Ferrara. But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Loan Pronto.
Okay, let me tell you about Loan Pronto. You know that I've been preaching this philosophy that Loan Pronto believes in, and I think it's a great match for you. I've refinanced my home. I shouldn't say I. My family. We have refinanced our home multiple times. We've been living in the same house for about 20 years now. And it's always a good move. But what we discovered back in the day was, man, it had a lot of paperwork. It took a lot of hassle. Man, it took a long time to get from point A to point B, which is what you're looking for, to lower that mortgage rate. That's the beauty of Loan Pronto, is they have a digital process now that streamlines the process. Most loans get done in 14 days or so. So that is really convenient for you. But at the end of the day, the net result long term is you're going to lower that mortgage payment. And in the short term, you get to skip the next couple of payments, which is huge for those of us on the budget. Who couldn't use that extra little space to do some things with your budget? And speaking of that, if you need cash right now and you've got some debts you need to pay off with college tuitions or credit cards that have rolled up a little bit, that's an option for you as well with Loan Pronto. You can take some money out of your home's equity and then put it towards that or reinvest in your home with a home improvement project. All of this is available to you with Loan Pronto. So take a look, because the mortgage rates are really low right now. That's to your advantage. 615-499-5780. 615-499-5780. Or go online at loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.
Hey, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Sharks from San Jose, not the Sharps from Vegas, Willie, the Sharks from Northern California, they'll be at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, October 26th. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to the 1025 The Game's YouTube page, and you'll be entered for a chance automatically to win tickets to see the Predators and the Sharks. One winner will be chosen, and that'll be on Monday, this upcoming Monday. That's October 4th, yes. Next week will be October. This week will be
Friday will be October.
I know, it's crazy. Already here. We're already into fall. Let's head east, where I guess the leaves are probably changing color as we speak in the Smoky Mountains. Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal, there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter, now joins us. Vinny, how you doing?
Hello, Vince.
Great.
Hey, Vince.
Awesome.
Glad you're well.
What else is new?
Hey, Vince, acknowledge us. That's a wrestling reference. He'll get it.
Yeah.
There he is.
Hey, unmute it. Unmute the phone. repeat everything you just said, because nobody heard it.
Well, I said all the positive, you know, good information. I'm done, yep. Actually. So I'll see you guys later.
All right. So that was your
talk
best
you
stuff.
Week.
That was your best stuff on mute?
Yes. Best for the listeners, that's for sure. No, I was saying, you guys mentioned the leaves, the colors changing. There are some leaves falling here, but haven't quite seen the colors yet. But I think that's maybe a weekend or two away, which is always obviously a beautiful thing. Let's hope we actually get fall weather as opposed to skipping right over it straight to winter like happened some years in Tennessee.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it right now. I think it's like mid-80s all week or low 80s all week. So we're not there yet. We talked about Florida's run game going into the game this past Saturday against Alabama, how effective it was. And, boy, that continued on through the Tennessee game. The Gators are really, really good at running the football, and Tennessee at times didn't have any answers to slow them down.
No, especially not in the second half once those run calls and the dilemma they put you in with either the running back or the quarterback runs, those conflicts that you have to deal with, it was tough. And that's why I said to you guys last week, I was more impacted on Florida's side from a positive than Alabama's on the negative from that game in Gainesville 2 weeks ago. And Florida, even though they didn't look quite as dominant a force in the first half, it's a four-quarter game, and they were able to show that they were the best team over those four quarters, and Tennessee had no second-half answers. You started to see them miss more tackles and got those Florida backs and even Emory Jones making guys miss in the open field when you got a one-on-one opportunity. But that happened to Alabama defenders as well, and that never happens to them. So, you know, and then Dan Mullen deserves a ton of credit. And Emory Jones had, I want to say, the 10th best passing performance in Florida history, something like that. And he is just playing on a higher level, despite some of those picks earlier in the year. He's playing at a higher level than I think a lot of us thought he would. And you got to credit Mullen, because he's a QB witch. He's able to figure things out and utilize guys' best strengths, especially when they're doubted going into the year. So, again, like I said in the after Alabama, Florida, I'm not going to drastically change my opinion on Florida's opponent, on Tennessee. Tennessee's season is going to be made off of these games, like what's coming up, not against the Floridas, the Georgias, and Alabama. That's not the bar. And we hear that from fans. Well, if you do this against them, what are you going to do against Florida, Georgia, and Alabama? I'm not judging them off of that. That's not going to determine their season. This stretch they got coming up will determine what kind of season Tennessee has.
I know we're just going into the beginning part of we're going into October at the end of the week, and it won't be until that Halloween weekend, the big outdoor party down in Jacksonville, but just getting a better look at Florida. And I know you probably watched some of Florida, Alabama as well, but I don't think people coming into the season really thought, I think everybody felt much stronger about Georgia than Florida, but the way both of them are playing right now, boy, that could be really setting up for a fantastic matchup at the end of October down in Jacksonville.
Well, I'm seeing that Florida, one, it has a much more imposing offense that give defenses some issues, and the way Florida's rushing the football is good. I think they have the best rushing attack in terms of yardage in the country right now. Who's better on defense than Georgia? And that's the kind of marquee strength versus strength that you want to see. But another thing is that Florida is better on defense. I don't know that they're great. They are better on defense than they were a year ago. And when you have a really effective offense, kind of like Ole Miss, even though they're not the same, but when you have an outstanding offense, you just have to be decent on defense and make some stops when you need it. Florida's DC, Todd Grantham, said this week when talking about Kentucky, who they have coming up, he said, well, they're going to cause us more problems and they're more difficult to prepare for, more so than our opponent last week, talking about Tennessee. And then today that was asked of Tennessee's running backs coach, Jerry Mack, how difficult Tennessee is to prepare for. Yeah, well, they're tempo, and he was talking about schemes and things like that, but he was trying to, you know, defend it and talk about some things. But Tennessee is not the best of later right now.
I think Vince may be in the Smoky Mountains because I think he tricked us.
He's right on the border. You're like, is it going to kick back
in? Is he in a cabin in the Smoky Mountains? Because I know we've been there. It can be spotty.
Yeah.
We can get every fourth word we hear great loud and clear.
I'm in a parking garage. I'm getting out of the parking garage, so that might be the issue.
Oh, this sounds better already.
Parking garages are
a problem.
Yeah,
it's
they're
a problem.
A no-go.
Okay.
They're a no-go.
We're doing better here.
You talked a lot about Emory Jones as you walk out of the parking garage. Emory Jones's play. What did you think of Hooker's play in the game against Florida?
He was okay. I don't think you could pin that game on him. Obviously, the biggest thing that he improved on was he didn't turn the ball over, which has been something that I thought could get him benched in a hurry if those things continued. You know, he reminds me at times of Josh Dobbs with his elusiveness and how slippery he is when he runs the football. I don't think he is quite as dynamic as Dobbs was. But, you know, I think in certain throws he's able to be efficient. He didn't have a massive arm. But I think he is good enough to where if Tennessee is doing the other things right to a higher level, like the tempo, like the imbalance and running the football, which they were better at in that Florida game, and if they get their offensive line healthy again, I think you can see them be able to win some games with Hooker at quarterback. The problem is he left that game hurt. Heupel said yesterday that he is not in concussion protocol, which would tell you, you would think that he did not suffer a concussion, but who knows on that. But, you know, Heupel didn't know his availability for this week. That, to me, really raises a concern of whether he's going to be able to play. If he already doesn't know his availability for Saturday, even if for some reason he gets cleared before the end of the week, guess what he's not doing this week? Practicing very much for an SEC opponent. So I think for this week, I would expect, unless we hear something drastically different tomorrow or Thursday, I think it points, at least short-term, back to Joe Milton. He didn't really take advantage of his opportunity late in that game, but Hooker was okay, solid, I guess would be the best way to describe him.
What do you think, Vince, now that you've seen them both play, and we've all watched the games, but you're watching closer, what do you think is the difference between Hooker and Milton? Is there a pretty big separation that Hooker is establishing here, or do you think Milton could still be comparable?
Well, what's a potential interesting dynamic is whether the coaching staff looks at these guys differently. Like going into that Florida game, I thought that maybe that the coaching staff, that in hearing Alex Golish talk about Hendon Hooker, just raved about him and his leadership and ability to process information and consistency and things like that, and then be a little bit tamer in the compliments of Hooker, of Milton. And then, you know, I wonder if maybe Josh Heupel likes or wants it to be Milton, and maybe Alex Golish might want it to be Hendon Hooker. I don't know that for a fact, but we all know that that kind of viewpoint, differing viewpoints on a coaching staff, absolutely does happen. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to coach up one guy or they're going behind, you know, privately to say, no, I want you to be the guy the coach doesn't want you to. That better not be happening. But I think from a comfort level, they could view it differently. But results are going to override it. And if Joe Milton isn't able to hit those deep shots, they finally did in that game. Hooker completed that 75-yard touchdown pass to Javonte Payton, the Mississippi State transfer. They were 0-13 on the season before that throw on passes 30 yards or more down the field. With this offense, they're predicated on the deep shots and the short passes. You can't hit those. You're going to get off the field and put your defense back on the field again, and you're not going to win. So they have to be able to hit those. And if Hooker shows the ability to do it and be more accurate with it, give his receivers a shot, then he's, as long as he does, he's in a turnover machine, he's ultimately the better choice. But it is still an interesting process. And here's another thing, guys, is so often when we're looking at, especially college players, people want to label guys as a complete, finished, permanent product. And they're not. Mm-hmm. Especially kids in college, guys develop a different race. Look at Theo Jackson, man. Theo Jackson he's their leading tackler, tackle for loss, a bunch of defensive categories. He made a huge jump to this super senior year for him. Guys develop at different places, and they're not always an end result. You see it in, sometimes it takes till the pros for guys to make that jump. So not everybody is a finished product. Let's see if Heupel, Golish, and these guys, Joey Halsey, the quarterback's coach, if they can rein in Milton to get him with that upside and that arm to improve. But as we've seen right now, Hooker is a safer, more consistent quarterback that sees things and makes more decisive plays at QB than Joe Milton does from what we've seen so far.
I think that's a really interesting dynamic that every team is trying to accomplish, get better every week. And so along those lines, this is the classic: is the glass half full, or is this a sign of things to come? If you look at that game, they had opportunities, Vince, as you know, to stay in the game. But penalties, yeah. You know, some key plays at key times, the Callaway drop on the fourth down where it really looks like they're going to be right in there, you know, maybe score and be right in the game going all the way to the end. That would have been a nice thing to do. But as we saw, they kind of collapse, they hit the wall, and they lose 38-14 instead. So which way do you think it can go? Like, what does that tell you?
Well, honestly, the penalties are a concern. Josh Heupel has consistently, where he has been a coach, been at 100 or worse in the country in their team's penalty. 2018, 103. 2019, 126 in the country. 2020, 118. This year, 119.
Why do you think that is? Can you put your finger on that? What's the thread that goes back to his days at UCF?
It is a concern, and I would say part of it is with the tempo that you're going at, and the frequency of plays. You have more plays, so you're going to have more times where somebody's going to jump offside, or you're going to have some issues. But their problem is the type of penalties they're getting. Like having two number ones on the field on a punt return, they both ran off the field, and so they played a punt return with nine players on the field, and Florida was able to pin them back deep outside the
field. Is that a record? Is nine a record? Like, what's the fewest players anybody's ever had in the field in an SEC game for one play?
Well, it's Tennessee, so it's possible that maybe they've set the bar lower than that. But here's the thing. They probably set the bar for the most players on the field back in that
They had the 13. Yes, I remember that.
Right. You balance it out. You got your 22 on the field, and you're in good shape. Or 11 on the field on average. But, those are the kind of things that are killing them. And I don't know the kind of penalties they wear at UCF other than the, you know, the pace of play and more plays. But this team isn't talented enough. They're not deep enough to overcome those things. Here's another factor, Willie, is time of possession. Tennessee is only on the field on offense for 25 minutes a game. That means the opponent's there for 35, 10 more minutes than you on average for every game. So if you have a UCF offense like you have the last 3 years, okay, who cares? You guys are really good. Your level of competition is lower. Big deal. You don't care about time of possession when you're great on offense. This team isn't great on offense. Oh, by the way, they're not great on defense. So now you're putting your defense lacking depth and maybe the level of talent in your conference, and now you're putting them on the field for more plays as well. So it's just a multitude of those things that are popping up. That's one of the bigger drawbacks of this coaching staff, I think, to this point. I think they're still doing a good job in scheming up the plays. Like you talked about, the Callaway drop. I mean, that was so well designed by Heupel and that staff. It was a great call for that situation. They weren't able to execute it. And then the buy-in. This team continues to play hard for them. So there are some positives with this coaching staff, but right now it is an incomplete work in progress. And because they're not on a high enough level to make up for it, you see it rear its ugly head and cost them in some games.
Talking to Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal. And Vince, looking around the SEC, things really starting to get intriguing. You had Georgia with an absolute shellacking of Vanderbilt. They seem to be looking the part. They will play Arkansas, who beat Texas A&M last week. Arkansas, now the eighth-ranked team in the country. If you had that going into the season, then I want to see your lottery ticket because it's going to win. And then Ole Miss, Alabama, Kentucky, and Florida. Of the Florida, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, which game do you think has the best shot of an upset?
I think Ole Miss is going to beat Alabama.
Wow, that was definitive.
Did I lose you guys?
No.
I was checking to make sure that came through clearly.
Is this like the Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, if I could spit it out, that commercial? Are you back in the parking garage? We think we heard Ole Miss is going to beat Alabama, but it may have been spotty. I'm not sure with your connection.
No, I think that since I'm out of the garage, I think we cleared that up.
Okay.
That's what I said. Look, I still think that Alabama is the best team, and I would pick them to win it all. I think there's a lot of stars aligning in this game for Ole Miss. Obviously, the familiarity of Lane Kiffin. I think Matt Corral is the best quarterback in the country. They're so good at their skill position. They have an offense with Matt Corral's running ability, they at times can give Alabama some problems with that dual threat that he brings to the table, like an Emory Jones did in that Florida game. Ole Miss is better defensively. They're not great, but they don't need to be with that offense. But they are more competent. They know what they're doing. They've simplified things. And they are good enough on defense to maybe make some stops. And here's another thing. When Alabama, it's not like Alabama never loses. The few times that they do in the regular season, more often than not, it's at home than away. Check those numbers. That's when Alabama can be beaten from time to time. I think there's a lot. And then Ole Miss is coming off of an open week as well. I still think Alabama is the best team. That doesn't mean that the best overall team at the end is going to win every game. So I think a lot of things fall into place for Ole Miss to pull the upset in Tuscaloosa.
Michael Rapaport told us last week that, yes, the actor-comedian who was in town at Zanies and has Derrick Henry on his fantasy football team says when he's having a really good fantasy day, he strips down. He takes his clothes off and runs around the house. I suspect if your prediction is right, Lane Kiffin may strip down and run around the field if they beat Alabama.
Don't give him any ideas.
That could happen.
I know what he's going to do. He's going to be even more adamant that Peyton and Eli do the Ole Miss-Tennessee game coming up. Because
I want him to.
Yeah, absolutely. And some Tennessee fans have been like, we don't want that. Lane wants that because they are going to gush over them and it's going to help them in recruiting. Sure, it probably won't be as flattering for Tennessee, but it would be so fascinating to hear them talk about what they see in the programs, their reaction to some things that are from a coaching standpoint that are going on, them going back and forth. So I don't care. That would be fascinating. But, yeah, with Lane, everything, social media, in person, all of that, everything is on the table and celebrating. Maybe his own victory, a cigar like you have in the Tennessee-Alabama games. Who knows? But he may be over the top and just in beating Tennessee later this year if that plays out too. But, yeah, there'll be a big-time celebration for sure. So, and look, I thought Arkansas had a great shot to beat A&M. Also, the Bucks losing to the Rams. So sometimes I'm kind of, wishy-washy on them. I feel better about this one. Not 100% who is, but, I think this is where a lot of the stars will align. We'll see.
Maybe if Peyton and Eli do the game, they could, one of their guests, because they have a guest a quarter, maybe one of the guests could be maybe one of the students at the time that burned the couches when Lane said he was leaving. So that'd be a fun guest.
I bet if they do that's it, David Cutcliffe will be a guest. Well, he might be busy. He could be playing, but they'll figure something out.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, that show is absolute gold. And how about the recruiting bump? Not that Alabama needs a bump, but Peyton Manning saying that, our next guest is coach the entire NFL. And then Saban saying, I want to coach a Manning. Oh, well, there's Arch out there. I mean, it was an absolutely gold recruiting tool for them. Not that they need it or anything.
Well, don't forget little Nicky slipped in there. We've got 73 guys in the NFL. He kind of slipped that in. He worked that in too, which isn't a bad thing. Of course, wouldn't we all work that in if that were the case? So, Vince, great stuff as always. It's going to be fun to see how this plays out. This is a big game this week. This is a game they could use. I mean, look, when you're looking for wins, this is a game. I'm not sure they can do it, but if they can pull out this win, this would be a good building block moving forward. We'll see how it plays out. We'll talk to you next week about it.
Yep, Missouri, Kentucky, some of these games are going to determine what kind of season they have, so you're absolutely right. All right, thanks, guys. Great to be on with you.
Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. When we come back, we'll start the third hour with our man, Tim Hasselbeck. We'll get into all things Titans and NFL with him as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.